today, saving language. You know about endangered species, maybe donated money to save whales or polar bears, but there's an even bigger extinction crisis facing us. The world's languages are dying. In fact, according to some estimates, we lose a language every 2 weeks or so. Luckily, there are people like David Harrison, a linguist who's traveled to some of the most remote places on the planet looking for lost languages, kind of like Indiana Jones. Steve Paulson tracked him down.
David, why are so many languages going extinct?
In a word, you could say globalization, the forces of industrialization, urbanization. But there's a more important pressure, and that is small languages are disadvantaged, they're disfavored. It's partly because those of us who speak major languages don't really appreciate the knowledge base that is found in small languages. And so the speakers of those languages, eventually they internalize those negative attitudes and they start to devalue their own languages. And you're losing a whole set of knowledge, tradition, history, mythology, wisdom that simply cannot be directly translated or transferred over into English.
So this is more than just saving words. I mean, you're talking about saving a way of life, a whole body of knowledge.
It's an immense body of knowledge. It's scientific knowledge. It's cultural knowledge. You know, we maybe think that we know everything we need to know and that we can Google everything or look everything up. But I've had the privilege of walking through the Australian outback with elders. I've walked through the Siberian forests with elders. And the knowledge they have is just astounding of those ecosystems. We would die there in a day or two. They thrive in those harsh environments because they know every plant and animal and the interactions. And that knowledge doesn't exist in English. It's not known to Western science. It's local knowledge. It's indigenous knowledge.
Well, in fact, I've heard one story that is in the Arctic people, the Yupik, they have something like 99 distinct types of sea ice formations.
Yes, because the Yupik who live in Alaska devote a great deal of their time to simply observing the ice. It's a major pastime or avocation, and it's crucial to their livelihood. They have well documented there are 99 different words for different types of sea ice formations. And so that's a nice example of local knowledge that's very complex. It's much more detailed than what, say, a meteorologist would know about sea ice.
Well, and I would think as we enter the age of global warming and ice starting to disappear, actually that kind of local knowledge could be incredibly useful to study what's happening.
It literally could save us. And so this is another reason not to dismiss or discount indigenous languages as quaint or obsolete. They have ancient knowledge. They have very deep knowledge. It's their intellectual property, their cultural wealth, and we could all benefit from having this knowledge be preserved.
And then there are these small ways that, I mean, as I was reading about your research, I mean, sort of individual words that say so much. I mean, for instance, I guess there's a single Tuvan word that means the short side of the hill?
Yeah, the word e, which I really loved. Tuvan has all kinds of wonderful complexities, but they really care about the landscape. And so every minute feature on the landscape is named and described in the language. And so e is a very useful concept because when you're out in this landscape, which has almost no trees, but lots of hills, and you might be herding goats or carrying firewood or riding a horse or something. You want to avoid the E, the short side of the hill, because that's the steepest side. Once you know that that exists, you see the landscape differently. So I never thought about the shape of hills, but once I learned that concept, I began to look at hills differently. So just knowing that word, that little package of information, affects the way you're interacting with the landscape. It affects your behavior. It is in some ways a survival technology.
Are linguists still finding new languages around the world?
They are. I mentioned before that there are approximately 7,000 languages that have been identified by science. I had the privilege of doing this in 2008 with my research team in India. We identified a language called Koro, that's K-O-R-O, spoken in a few remote villages up in the Himalayas. And this language had never been recognized by the political or social structures or by scientists. So it's a language that's completely new to science. And it's very exciting to be able to make the first recordings of this language. So I have a sound clip of a woman named Abamu Degio, and she's singing a traditional song in the Koro language.
Icharu o se long di me di go hungora lo ingo.
So you spend a lot of your time traveling around the world meeting people who speak these rare languages, right?
Yeah, it's a real privilege, and I've been doing this for 15 or more years. I get to meet people who, in many cases, have never traveled more than a few miles from the village where they were born on some remote island or perhaps up in the Himalayas or the Andes. They have an incredibly local existence, and yet they have an incredibly expansive worldview. And I'm always amazed at the knowledge that they have and that they're willing to share. I write about this in my book, The Last Speakers, The Quest to Save the World's Most Endangered Languages. These amazing individuals that I refer to as language warriors. Often they're elderly, but often I'm also meeting a younger generation who are doing very innovative things like performing hip-hop in their languages.
Who performs hip-hop?
Well, hip-hop is global, of course. And so I've been in communities in Chile, in India, in Micronesia, where people have borrowed the genre of hip-hop, but they're creating lyrics in the local languages. And so I have a recording of some young men speaking the Akha language, which is spoken in the Himalayas in India, and they're performing a hip-hop song in this language.
Asam pasam pa lapa ni chay na for futu futu nya fu mi nya futu nya gijiri ne piyari ne hojjara. Asam kasam ka lapa ni chay na for futu futu nya fu mi nya futu nya gijiri ne piyari ne hojjara.
It's a song about love and romance, and it uses the metaphor of hot chili peppers. That's about as much of a translation as I can give.
That's great. Now, you've also developed something that you've called talking dictionaries. So tell me about this.
Well, you know, we live in the internet age and we take it very much for granted. But most of the world's languages have no presence whatsoever in the internet. You can't find even a single word, much less a recording. And so I help communities build something that I call talking dictionaries. You can visit talkingdictionary.org and see some of the more than 60 talking dictionaries we've created. For example, the Tsleil-Waututh language, which is a Native American language spoken in Oregon, it has one fluent speaker and a handful of people who are trying to learn it within the tribe. And the fluent speaker, his name is Bud Lane, he sat down and he recorded, I think, 12,000 words in the Tsleil-Waututh language.
It's fascinating. So you're talking about using new technology to try to preserve these sometimes very ancient languages.
Not only preserve them, but to revitalize and expand them. They do things like sending text messages in the language, and they have to invent new words for technology. So they have to decide, you know, are we going to borrow the word computer for English, or are we going to make up a new word in the Tsleil-Waututh language that means brain in a box? They tend to go for the latter solution. And so even with a minuscule number of speakers, you can have new intellectual things happening, like the invention of new words and concepts.
One of the things that's so wonderful to hear you talk about is, I mean, the optimism that you seem to have. I mean, you know, one way to read this whole story is it's, oh, my God, you know, all these languages are going extinct. But there is a concerted effort, obviously, in some places to not only preserve them, but to revitalize them in some cases.
Indeed, we are in the middle of an extinction crisis, one that parallels and even exceeds the extinction crisis of plant and animal species. But there is a vibrant global movement for language revitalization, and it's exciting to see these communities around the world leveraging new technologies and making a renewed commitment to keep their languages. They realize in some cases they've been presented with the false choice that they have to give up their heritage language and only speak a global language like Spanish or English. And so people are realizing this and they're unwilling to give up their languages, and we should all be really happy that that is an emerging trend.
Speak my language.
David Harrison is a linguist at Swarthmore College. He co-directs the Enduring Voices Project at the National Geographic, and he's the co-star of the documentary film The Linguists. His most recent book is called The Last Speakers: The Quest to Save the World's Most Endangered Languages.